Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, February 6, 2017. President Kiir visits UAE amid tight security.
The president has come here, I think he delivered a very strong message to people to remain calm and people look to make sure that he is really determined to implement the peace agreement.
And Sudan accuses Egypt of supporting Sudanese rebels.
We will actually continue our pressure on the President Sisi to stop that. Egypt can play a positive role actually with the opposition to make them join the dialogue and the environment of reconciliation which is going on in Sudan.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. President Salva Kiir is in Yei town today to attend the 100-year anniversary of the Episcopal Church in Yei. Humanitarian organizations say thousands of people continue to flee parts of Yei River State because of clashes between government forces and members of an armed group. Nabil Biagio has more for VOA from Juba.
Yei River State Governor David Lokonga Moses welcomed President Kiir and his high-level delegation to Yei town this morning.
The president has come here, I think he delivered a very strong message to people to remain calm and people look to make sure that he is really determined to implement the peace agreement.
Governor Lokonga insists his state is secure despite reports of rampant insecurity.
There were no major clashes that have been reported between the government and the SPLA and the town, you can witness the thousand people who are here, and the security situation is calm. Kajikeji also, there was some negative propaganda that they're making people actually to cross to Uganda.
Lokonga urged the tens of thousands who have fled Yei, Morobo, Lanya, and Kajukeji over the past weeks to return home, assuring them that the security situation is stable.
I want to urge the people, you know, not to keep in the neighboring countries, you know, preventing the children to go to school. I'm appealing to people to really return back.
Lokonga describes recent attacks that have occurred in Kajukeji and other Yei River State counties as isolated incidents, but insists the situation is now under control.
This is some other things like isolated cases in the areas where the armed group always go and mix up with the civilian and they start provoking the government. You know those people would really adhere to the national call.
Late last year, President Kiir called for an inclusive national dialogue to restore peace to the country. Elias Taban, president of South Sudan Evangelical Alliance in Yei, says church leaders like him and some 50,000 people in Yei town are calling for peace so that those who have fled to neighboring Uganda can return home.
UNHCR and UN OCHA and other humanitarian organizations have registered 50,000 people. And those 50,000 are still here in Yei town, those who have fled. We are praying for peace. We are the church. We want peace. And we want them to come back. We are trying all our efforts to bring our people back.
Last month, First Vice President Taban Dengai visited Yei River State to call on all warring parties to lay down their weapons. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
Sudan has accused Egypt of sheltering and supporting rebels opposing President Omar al-Bashir. Sudan's Information Minister Ahmed Bilal tells VOA's James Batty that the accusation is not directed at Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, whom he calls a good friend of Sudan, but rather at the Egyptian security and media.
Actually, it is true, and he said that although his contact and relations with President is very good, but yet he is complaining of the security people in Egypt. They are not actually in good terms with Sudan, and they are actually harboring and they are supporting the opposition, and have been many times Sudan asked them not to do that, and there is a complaint from our side, and in spite of that, they are still supporting the opposition in need. From our side, we didn't do that. And we told them that if you know anybody, although we have actually a lot of Egyptians in Sudan, more for the first time, almost 500,000 of Egyptians now in Sudan. And we have many people coming from Syria, from Eritrea, from Ethiopia, from other places, from south of Sudan, around about 4 million refugees and those people searching for wares and these things. But we are not supporting any sort of opposition to any of these countries. And if you find that, we just expel them.
Minister, I must say that this is shocking to me because I was under the view or consideration that President Bashir and President El-Sisi are friends, and Egypt and Sudan are friends. So how can this allegation come about? Is your president accusing President Sisi or who is in Egypt?
No. He is not accusing President Sisi. He told that he is in a very good, actually, relation with Sisi. Is fantastic, and they are very actually in contact, and the relation between them are very good. But we have two complaints from Egypt. One of them is from the media. The many times they are actually attacking Sudan, the media, and this is and another thing, security, intelligence there, and they are actually supporting. And he said this, although our relations with President Sisi is very good, but it is not the same with the security people in Egypt.
So what does your country want to do about that? Are you going to complain to the Egyptian government? What are you going to do?
In fact, we'll tackle the problem based on the good relations between the two presidents and the direct contact. And we will actually continue our pressure on the President Sisi to stop that. Egypt can play a positive role, actually, with the opposition to make them join the dialogue and the environment of reconciliation which is going on in Sudan, instead of supporting them and giving all the facilities to oppose Sudan.
If it is true now that Egypt is supporting some Sudanese rebels and opposition people, could it be that this is reciprocity? Because some time ago, there were allegations that your government was also supporting members of the Muslim Brotherhood.
In fact, I told you, if the Egyptians have alleged that we are supporting Muslim Brothers in Sudan, we told them, if you have anyone, if you pointed anyone, and if you are there, organized Muslim Brothers there making opposition, next day we are going to expel them out of Sudan.
That's Sudan's Information Minister Ahmed Bilal speaking to VOA's James Batty from Khartoum. While U.S. lawmakers and the courts try to parcel out the legality of U.S. President Donald Trump's executive orders instituting a travel ban on seven Muslim-majority countries, Sudanese students studying in U.S. are putting off their travel plans until all of these issues regarding the ban are sorted out. Ayen Bior has more from Washington.
While tens of thousands of Americans flooded international airports to protest President Trump's temporary travel ban, many students studying here from Sudan worry about leaving the country. But one Sudanese studying in the U.S. sees the ban as a learning opportunity to test the strength of American institutions and the system of checks and balances in the judicial and executive branches. Yasir Zaidan is a 25-year-old Sudanese student on a visa to the U.S. Zaidan says the ordeal has been stressful, but he is confident that U.S. courts will sort everything out.
It's very educating for me coming from a country that is not ruled by democracy to see how really democracy could protect itself, how the system of democracy could check and balance between different powers.
Zaidan, a graduate from the University of Khartoum, studied electrical engineering in his native Sudan. He had a change of heart after graduating in 2012 and switched his interest to public policy. Zaidan and many others like him are waiting to see what the courts decide on President Trump's executive order. He says he earned a degree in international affairs from the Institute of World Politics here in Washington last December, but is putting all his plans on hold until he learns what happens with the travel ban. On Friday, James Robert, a judge in the Federal District Court in the northwest city of Seattle, Washington, temporarily banned the 90-day suspension of entry into the United States of people from Sudan, Somalia, Iran, Syria, Iraq, Yemen, and Libya. Judge Roberts' order reversed the executive order and allowed people from the seven Muslim-majority countries who had been authorized to travel to enter the country. Vetted refugees have also been allowed in. The judge's action drew immediate criticism from Mr. Trump, who tweeted, "He cannot believe a judge would, quote, put our country in such peril," end quote. The Trump administration filed a legal brief on Saturday, insisting the U.S. must take additional steps to ensure that those approved for admission do not intend to harm Americans and that they have no ties to terrorism. Maureen Alneil, a graduate Sudanese student at Columbia University in New York City, says she plans to stay in the country during her 2 years of study. She says the university's international student office has been supportive, but is limited in the amount of help they can offer.
They themselves don't know what they're working with. That's exactly what they've told us, or what they told some of my colleagues who are planning to travel during the winter break. They told them, like, we don't know what we're working with. We'll try to support you as much as possible, but we don't know what's the extent of what we can do for you. So we just advise you to stay here. That's basically all that we've heard.
Some 100 tech companies, including global giants Apple, Google, Microsoft, and Facebook, are up in arms over the travel ban and filed a legal brief yesterday opposing it. The brief says the executive order, quote, inflicts significant harm on American business, innovation, and growth, and makes it more difficult and expensive for U.S. companies to recruit, hire, and retain some of the world's best employees, end quote. In the meantime, Zeidan canceled plans to visit family back home in Khartoum.
So I decided just to cancel my travel plans till it's clear what would be my what would be the visa status of Sudanese, or how Sudanese would apply for visas going forward.
The deadline for the government to submit additional legal briefs to the appeals court is today at 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, or 2300 GMT. Legal experts say that a final decision will take time, and the case will likely reach the U.S. Supreme Court. Ayan Bior, VOA News, Washington.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, several humanitarian groups are calling for an immediate end to FGM. Find out more when we come back.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what food did you eat in your childhood that you hated then and still hate today?
There's that small fish called mokene in one of our languages here in Africa, or rather Uganda. I didn't like it back then. It's really small. I didn't like it back then, and I don't like it even now.
I hated sweet potatoes because it was very much cooked at home, always. Even now I hate it.
Okra. It's too slippery to take it with any sort of food, and I have vowed never to take it again.
I think matoke and silverfish. I really didn't like the experience. It's the thing I could last think of having as a dish.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Several UN agencies are calling for urgent action to end female genital mutilation. They say some progress has been made in getting rid of this harmful tradition, but not enough. 3 million girls under the age of 15 continue to be mutilated each year. Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
Nearly 200 million girls and women are living with the harmful, traumatic consequences of female genital mutilation. And the United Nations reports an additional 3 million girls, most under the age of 15, continue to be mutilated every year. UN agencies report half of all women and girls have been cut in three countries, Egypt, Ethiopia, and Indonesia. They add the highest prevalence of FGM among girls ages 14 and under is found in Gambia, Mauritania, and Indonesia. Adebisi Adebayo is program advisor to the UN Inter-African Committee on Traditional Practices. She tells VOA that FGM, which has no formal basis in religion, persists because of social and cultural pressure.
In some communities, it's a requirement for girls to pass into womanhood. It is a requirement for them to be eligible for marriage. In some communities, like in Kenya, and I think also in Edo, which is in southwestern part of Nigeria, a girl that's not caught is not marriageable. And that is when you find an adult lady willingly submitting herself to be caught.
Female genital mutilation involves the partial or total removal of the external female genitalia for non-medical reasons. It is usually carried out by women circumcisers. In many places, however, FGM is carried out by health professionals, a practice the World Health Organization calls unethical. The United Nations says some progress is being made toward abolishing FGM. It reports that nearly 3,000 communities, where the UN Population Fund and UN Children's Fund work, have declared they are abandoning this practice. It says more progress must be made to reach the UN's Sustainable Development Goal of ending female genital mutilation by 2030. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
South Sudanese from the former Unity State who graduated from Ugandan universities and colleges since the outbreak of conflict in 2013 say they prefer to remain in Uganda rather than return to South Sudan, where insecurity is rampant in parts of the country and the prospect of finding a good-paying job is slim. Simon Peter Apiku reports for VOA from the Ugandan capital, Kampala.
The Unity State Universities and Colleges Students Union in Uganda organized a party in Kampala last week honoring more than 200 students who graduated from Ugandan universities and colleges since 2013, despite violence at home and tough economic and financial conditions. Many students were forced to drop out because they couldn't pay tuition fees. Sharjek Mark Hothnyang studied human resources management at Uganda's St. Lawrence University. Hothnyang has no plans of returning home anytime soon because of what he sees as the widespread corruption and nepotism in South Sudan.
The environment in my country is not proper me. And in addition to that, looking for a job in South Sudan is not easy. Unless I have my boss, having my relative who is general, having somebody of my in-laws who is also working in a certain organization.
Ross Cholgai, who graduated with a business degree from the Uganda-based International University of East Africa, also doubts she'll be able to find a job in her country.
If I go to my country, I cannot say now if I go there I may get a job because the situation is somehow hard. But I can also do other courses here to improve my knowledge and to also to strengthen my career. And then after, if situation cool, I may go to my country and work.
John Boskong, who holds a bachelor's degree in international relations and diplomacy from Cavendish University, Uganda, says the more than 3-year conflict has ruined his dream of returning home after completing his studies to join the foreign service.
It's difficult because people they are now fighting in South Sudan. The country is now totally done. That is why it's becoming difficult.
Elizabeth Nikweth Nyal, who has a diploma in public health from the Makerere Institute of Technology, says she would rather help the hundreds of thousands of South Sudanese refugees living under what observers say they consider appalling conditions in camps across Uganda.
Maybe I go to refugees camps and then I hope and my tribe mates, my country mates, by developing them, giving them knowledge about how to protect themselves from negative behaviors that may result into ill health to them.
South Sudanese like Hothnyang, Kong, Nyal and Guy consider themselves lucky to be able to complete their undergraduate studies outside of the country. Last year, hundreds of their colleagues were forced to drop out of school because of the country's political crisis and the resulting steep drop in the value of the South Sudanese pound. It meant many parents could not afford to pay their sons and daughters' tuition. Guy says she was concerned she might never graduate because her parents could not come up with the money for tuition during the final semester of college.
My parents, they've tried their best to educate me. Although the situation was hard for them, but they have also decided to educate me to finish my study.
In a somewhat unusual arrangement, the school allowed Guy to sit for final exams and agreed to let her parents pay for her final semester later so she could graduate on time. Hothnyang blames the country's two warring parties' failure to end the conflict for the political and economic crisis facing South Sudan.
The peace which has been signed by the two warring parties should have been implemented rather than increase the political stability. We have tired of war.
Kong agrees, adding a peaceful and stable South Sudan would open up many opportunities for graduates.
The both parties should come together and make a peace. The graduate should get a job.
Hundreds of South Sudanese graduate from different universities and colleges in Uganda each year, but as the conflict drags on, many of them worry they face an uncertain future, whether they stay in Uganda or return to their homeland. For VOA News, I am Simon Peter Piku in Kampala.
We turn to Cameroon now, where the Indomitable Lions have lived up to their name by winning this year's African Cup of Nations. It was a surprising upset for a team many had deemed second-rate heading into the football tournament. Muki Edwin Kinzeka has more on the celebrations in Yaoundé.
Thousands of fans celebrated on the streets of the capital Yaoundé. They hit spoons, dishes, drums and blew trumpets to celebrate Cameroon's championship victory at the Africa Cup of Nations. This fan, Njitap Anatol, says he is very proud because Cameroon has defeated Egypt by 2-1. He says the Lions can beat any team in the world. Cameroon went into the 16-team tournament with low expectations after 7 regulars called up to participate refused to play. They said they were too busy with important games for their European teams. But others, like goalkeeper Fabrice Ondua, who plays for a Spanish club, did show up winning accolades.
Ondua is a grand sportif.
Football fan Pauline Cheju says Ondua is a great sportsman. He is sticky, like chewing gum. When he takes hold of the ball, he does not let it go. Victory has redeemed Cameroon's coach Hugo Broos, who faced criticism after 7 team regulars refused to play. Broos said he did not want players who may not give their best. 15 of the players on this year's Cameroon team were playing in a continental tournament for the first time. One of Cameroon's Premier League coaches, Elundu Kizito, said the team showed patriotism and professionalism.
Lorsqu'on rentre dans l'honnêteté professionnelle,
de manière intellectuelle, on comprend que...
He says, although Hugo Broos has never trained a national football team of any nation and faced difficulties assembling trusted players and regulars, he still found the winning formula. He says all coaches should learn from Broos's example. This anthem to the Lions by Cameroon's military band blasts through speakers at the head office of Cameroon's Football Federation. Hundreds of supporters are here awaiting transport to the airport to give the team a hero's welcome. Awa Fonka Augustin, governor of Cameroon's Western Region, is one of the fans ready to welcome the team home.
A great day. This is wonderful, unexpected. I think the majority of us saw this team from the beginning and we didn't believe that they could come up with these wonderful results. Today we see what faith and determination can do. I think they've made all of us proud.
Besides winning the Continental Trophy, Cameroon striker Christian Basogok was voted best player of the tournament, Fabrice Ondua best goalkeeper, and team captain Benjamin Mukanjo, man of the match. It was Cameroon's first time to lift the AFCON trophy since 2002. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Yaoundé.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. President Salva Kiir is in Yei Town today trying to assure residents that the security has improved there despite repeated attacks in the area. The president timed his visit to coincide with the 100-year anniversary of the South Sudan Episcopal Church in Yei. Humanitarian groups say thousands of people continue to flee Yei River State because of clashes between government forces and gunmen in Kejukeji County. Yei River State Governor David Lokonga Moses welcomed President Kiir and his high-level delegation to Yei Town. The governor insists that his state is secure despite reports of rampant insecurity. While U.S. lawmakers and the courts try to figure out the legality of U.S. President Donald Trump's travel ban on seven Muslim-majority countries, Sudanese students in the U.S. are putting off their travel plans until all of the issues regarding the ban are sorted out. While tens of thousands of Americans flooded international airports to protest Mr. Trump's travel ban recently, many students studying here from Sudan worry about leaving the country. But one Sudanese studying in the U.S. sees the ban as a learning opportunity to test the strength of American institutions and the system of checks and balances in the judicial and executive branches of the U.S. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Sudan Mujahja by Gordon Kong.
Yeah, Jab Sudan.
We have been listening to Gordon Kong with the song Sudan Mujaja. I am John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.